Thank you. I have the pleasure of introducing Dr. James Rossetti. And I've heard Dr. Rossetti speak, and you're in for a treat. So Dr. Rossetti is a doctor of osteopathy. He's an associate director of the cell transplantation program and director of the apheresis program at the Western Pennsylvania Hospital. Dr. Rossetti earned his doctor of osteopathic medicine degree from the Lake Erie College of Osteopathic Medicine and completed an internship and internal medicine residency at St. Francis Medical Center of Pittsburgh. He did fellowship training in hematology and medical oncology at the Western Pennsylvania Hospital and is board certified in internal medicine, medical oncology, and hematology. He's an assistant professor at the Temple University School of Medicine and an adjunct clinical instructor for the Lake Erie College of Osteopathic Medicine. Dr. Rossetti is a recognized expert in hematological malignancy with particular interest in myeloid malignancy, acute myelogenous leukemia, myelodysplasia, and cellular therapy. The Myelodysplastic Syndromes Foundation recognizes Dr. Rossetti as a recommended specialist physician dedicated to treating disorders that inhibit healthy blood cell production. He's an accomplished clinical investigator with numerous publications in the scientific and lay literature and is a particularly sought-after speaker. He is also a leader of the institution's virtual hospice program, which provides a unique complement of services for critically ill patients who cannot be moved to a traditional hospice. He serves as a member and consultant on the Western Pennsylvania Hospital Ethics Committee, and as an adult stem cell transplant physician, he has a keen interest in debunking the myths that surround the stem cell debate. And I think you're going to learn a lot today about that very issue. As a pro-life physician, he's spoken widely in support of adult stem cells, which preserve life at all levels of development. Likewise, he seeks to educate the public on the moral and scientific problems associated with embryonic stem cell research. Please join me in welcoming Dr. James Rossetti.
In the interest of time, we could have skipped all that, because the other part of it is I'm Italian, and when I get rambling, it's hard to shut me up. I want to thank you all for allowing me to come out here today and talk about something I'm very passionate about. Unfortunately, we're being misinformed. We're being told lies about this issue. And I hope you can leave here today taking home a real message that is not only one that is moral in nature, but is also very much scientific in nature. I want you to leave here today knowing that not only is morality and what is right on your side, but in reality, the science is on your side as well. Dr. Kenny, I'm not sure if he's still here, he pointed out that we really need to look to medicine for a lot of what we're doing moving forward as a society. And time again on the right to life issues, the science supports everything we're doing. And God willing, in time, we will indeed do things in this country and throughout the world that save the most innocent of lives. So Molly, Mike, and everybody who welcomed me here, thank you. Thank you so much. This, again, is an issue that the media has decided to take into its own hands to educate each of you and me and everybody else out there. When I was in medical school, I knew very, very little about stem cells. I can honestly say that was, about 19 years ago. I don't remember a single lecture on stem cells. Yet at the time, that debate was just starting, as many of you are aware. Recently, I was rotating with one of my favorite medical students, and he said we were talking about lung cancer. Lung cancer is one of the most common cancers we see in the world today. And he said to me, you know, after I was asking him all these questions and he just wasn't getting a handle on these things, I said, didn't you learn about lung cancer in medical school? He said, boy, Dr. Rossetti, you know I didn't, but I had 2 one-hour lectures on the drug Viagra. And I hate to use that, but that's a true story. And it speaks to the spirit of our times and where our society is going. Now, Viagra has a role in the right setting, of course, but it speaks to what even our medical professionals are being taught. And then I asked him, did you learn anything about stem cells? And he acknowledged most of what he had learned about stem cells came from CNN. And unfortunately, we're not getting the truth from CNN. I know we're in a time crunch, But this is an issue that really deserves a little time, so forgive me if I go a little bit over, but I will try to speak quickly as possible. As we go through the program tonight, you're going to have this afternoon, you're going to have an opportunity to see some of my patients who have gone through adult stem cell treatments. These people are amazing. Has anybody ever heard of Michael Casey? Michael Casey, a wonderful author, spiritual man, wrote this book called Toward God. I would recommend it to anybody. And he says in his book, when life is very difficult, people sometimes lay hold of resources they never knew they had. The easygoing, self-centered exterior is cast off and a person of heroic stature emerges. Under pressure, false and foolish facades slip away. A new person emerges, or rather the one that lay dormant these many years, tyrannized by an outward image bearing little resemblance to what was within. Suffering causes the mirror to crack. As the pieces fall away, we find what was hidden behind. And I think that is so true, not only of our mission here, as people who will face suffering for bringing the truth to the world, but true of every patient that I see. Almost universally, they go through this process. Not for themselves. As Christians, we know our hope is in the crucified Christ, and we know there is a resurrected life for all of us in His name. And these people don't cling to life knowing that. They cling to life for their families. And they cling to life for the opportunity to spread the word, and so many of them are helping me in getting this message out. So let's move forward and talk about stem cells. And that's, again, I want to point out to you when you leave here today, know the science is behind you. But the media continues to tell lies. And I forgive me if I sound judgmental in saying that. I don't know how much of it's agenda and how much of it's plain old ignorance. Only God knows that. But the truth is, they're not telling the truth when it comes to this issue. And this is a perfect example. In February of 2009, Time magazine says how the coming revolution in stem cells could save your life. Grips you. Stem cells. What do we think about as a community, as a society, when we hear the word stem cells? We think about embryonic stem cells. We don't even know that various types of stem cells exist as a society. Because the media has convinced us, people in government and in Hollywood have convinced us somehow that all stem cells are embryonic stem cells. And that is simply not the case, as you'll see here today. Many of you are aware of this already. So that's point number one. Point number two is this: diabetes, heart disease, Parkinson's, it says up here on the front of Time magazine, our source for science. And raise your hand if you do not know somebody affected by one of these diseases. Diabetes, heart disease, Parkinson's. We all do. And so as a Christian man standing before you, I want you to know that this is a sensitive issue. It's a very sensitive issue. These people have real illnesses. We've all been affected by them. And time again, I get people calling and saying, but doc, if I could just see my daughter walk again. If I could just see my grandfather be able to pick up his grandkids. This type of thing. It's a sensitive issue, and it's one we have to approach with love, but we also have to approach it with love and honesty and truth. As you read this particular article, what you will find out very quickly is that 90%+ of it is talking about the hope behind embryonic stem cells. And at the tail end is a 10% section that basically talks a little bit about adult stem cells and what's already being done in clinics every single day. They don't talk a whole lot about that. They talk about this hope of embryonic stem cells, which have today, as of right now, done nothing to help a single individual anywhere in the world. Nowhere in the world. And in fact, in animal models, they've done harm, not good. This young lady here, does anybody recognize this picture? This is a great story. It was misrepresented by CNN, another perfect example. This young lady here had tuberculosis. Tuberculosis destroyed her trachea, leaving her basically unable to breathe effectively. And her physicians decided they were going to do a trachea. The trachea is the windpipe. They were going to do a transplant of a cadaver trachea. The trachea, though, is rather cartilaginous. It's kind of dead tissue, really. Doesn't have a good blood supply. So oftentimes these tracheas they put in don't grow in the body really well. So what they did is they took her own stem cells, harvested from her own body, and bathed the cadaver trachea in the stem cells and then implanted it into her body. And you see her here now looking completely normal, breathing normally. Yet the day that this story broke on CNN, the ticker said, controversial use of stem cells cures young lady with tuberculosis. What was controversial about this? These were stem cells taken from her own body. And yet we were being made to think that they were embryonic stem cells. And in point of fact, they were not. And this is the type of perpetual myth that we're faced with. So what is a stem cell? That's the first question we have to ask. And why so much excitement behind stem cells? Stem cells have two very unique properties that give them hope, and unfortunately give them hype as well. The hope behind stem cells is really twofold. One is that when a stem cell divides, it may not become any tissue in the body, but it can also become another stem cell. Unlike some other tissues in the body which don't have that potential, they can become another stem cell and potentially live forever. So there's this sense that they have this immortality to them that allows them to live. And you can imagine when we talk about stem cell lines, what we're talking about when you hear that term is a bunch of stem cells that have all been grown from one individual stem cell. And so scientists get very excited and say, if we just have all these stem cell lines, we can potentially use them to do the second thing that's exciting about stem cells, which is the fact that they can turn into any other tissue in the human body. And you can see then how we might be able to cure any disease. Maybe diabetes by treating the pancreas, maybe heart disease by injecting either directly into the heart muscle or into the damaged blood vessels, etc. So that's the hope. They can turn into other stem cells and live forever, or they can become any tissue type in the human body. Next question is, where do we get them? And in the case of embryonic stem cells, there is only one answer. And that answer is right here. It's in what we refer to as, or scientists refer to as, the blastocyst, which is a growing child at 5 to 7 days gestation. And what you're seeing here is the outer cell ring, which is the placenta, whose job in life is to protect the growing child, which is what scientists like to refer to as the inner cell mass. A crude name, but it's a growing child. Right here, these cells here are what, in just a few short days even, will start to take on recognizable features. What's important, and what everyone in this room knows, is that all of the DNA this child ever needs to be fully human is there. It's there. In its entirety, right here. So in the case of embryonic stem cells, scientists take these cells out and culture them onto a petri dish and hope that they divide into stem cell lines and hopefully into other tissues to cure a variety of the diseases that I mentioned earlier. What is the problem with that? This is the crux of the moral argument. There is no way to do this without universally destroying the embryo. The embryo dies. There have been some scientific papers that said they figured out how to do this and they had to be recanted because they were false in the way that they disclose their scientific information. As of today, there is no way to do this successfully. And we'll talk about where these embryos come from near the end of the program, but the bottom line is the embryo is destroyed as embryonic stem cells are cultivated. I mentioned already this is a highly sensitive topic. There are a lot of people out there with very real diseases who absolutely believe that their only hope is in embryonic stem cells. Christopher Reeves, Superman, equestrian accident, fractured his neck. Eventually died of complications of paralysis. Very sad. It was devastating. And then, of course, his wife, the cancer. A tragedy for he and his family, no matter how you slice it. Yet he went to his death believing his only hope to ever walk again resided in embryonic stem cells. And I wish he were here today, and I wish that when he were alive, he had acknowledged that that's not the case, and had acknowledged some of the stories that I'm going to talk about in just a minute. Michael J. Fox, who saw the Oprah Winfrey show not all that long ago when Michael J. and Dr. Oz were on? And everybody got excited. Finally, we had somebody in the spotlight stand up and stand for what you and I believe in, Dr. Oz. Oprah and Michael J. Fox were conversing about the hope of embryonic stem cells, and Dr. Oz, what did he say? I'm paraphrasing, but he said the debate over stem cells should be dead. Adult stem cells are working and embryonic stem cells are not. And this was to Michael J. Fox, who completely to this day also agrees that his only hope is in embryonic stem cells. Again, what does Michael J. Fox have? Parkinson's at a very early age. Parkinson's disease, when it affects young people, they typically don't do very well at all. And he's been through a variety of procedures, but not that particular one. And then Ron Reagan Jr. continues to, in opposition to what his father believed, and as his father, Ron Reagan, was president, this issue was just starting to come to the forefront. And he continues to support embryonic stem cells as well. This is a slide you either love or you hate. I found it on the web. For those of you who are just starting to vote, and by the way, I'm thrilled to see so many youths here today. It's wonderful. You're the ones that have to go out there. How many people here are in high school? All right, college? All right, so all these high school students, let me tell you, when you get to university, when you get wherever you go, whether it is a Christian school or a secular school or wherever you're going, you are going to be told that embryonic stem cells are hope. Because there's people out there that are going to try to deceive you on this right inside our own camp, unfortunately. But hopefully today will help you to overcome those arguments. And hopefully for the rest of us who might be at a dinner party or something, we can do the same thing in overturning these things. So this is an old-fashioned voting booth. When you all vote, that doesn't look like this. It's all computer now. But this is an old-fashioned voting booth, and this is the blastocyst there in the voting booth. And it brings to mind two things when I saw this slide. Immediately came to my mind twofold. One was the constant pressure we hear from the opposition of this issue to say, do not bring this issue into the voting booth. How often do we hear that? It's not essential, they tell us. There are so many other things to worry about. There's the economy. There's this. There's that. There's the war. Don't bring this one into the voting booth. Folks, what is more important than human life? You and I know that. How we get people to understand that is beyond me, but we're going to keep working at it nonetheless. The other one that came to my mind, the other issue, was the striking reality that we are in a fallen world. And folks, we know there's an enemy who wants to destroy our efforts in this issue, and I think the weather today was an example of that. And we didn't allow it to happen, and I applaud all of you for being here. But good Lord only knows, had these lives been born, how they might have overturned the direction our country is going in. We have to continue to fight against it. This is what the media would have you think. A political cartoon. Political cartoons generally are written by very bright people, by the way. They can summarize something very quickly in a very small space. And this one here on the left-hand side, you see a test tube with presumably a stem cell, and on the right-hand side, little Johnny or Janie or whoever living in a hospital bed waiting to be cured. And underneath it says, the stem cell debate, decisions, decisions. As if to suggest every person in this room has no heart. Because we are withholding the opportunity of Joey or Janie or Johnny to be cured with our rhetoric about life and about embryonic stem cells destroying valuable life. This is what they'd have us believe. Don't believe the hype. Please don't believe it. It's not this simple. Embryonic stem cells have not cured anyone. The most conservative embryonic stem cell researchers suggest we are at least 4 decades away from ever using one in a clinic. So again, this is a graphic depiction of what I showed you earlier, with the blastocyst being removed, the inner cell mass of the blastocyst being removed, with the hope, and I stress hope, of becoming these tissue types, because we just can't do it very well. Who's aware of Father Tad Pahalchik? Brilliant man, Harvard, Yale trained neuroscientist, Catholic priest, wonderful, wonderful man. Came up with something called the 10 Great Myths in the debate over stem cell research. A few years ago when I started doing these talks, I went to one of his programs and I said, boy, my talk pales in comparison, Father. May I use some of your 10 Great Myths? And he said, of course. And over the years they've evolved and I've adapted them to my own practice and added sort of a personal flair to them. And of course, some of these issues have changed, some for the better, some for the worse, as you will see. But I'm grateful to him. The first myth, and this is the mother of all myths, is that stem cells can only come from embryos. Let's look at the human developmental continuum, and you can see, thank God, this slide acknowledges that humans are here from the start to the finish. We're all human. This is actually taken from a website of an embryonic stem cell support program. But nonetheless, you can see they call it human. That's a start, I suppose. Here's embryonic stem cells. But later on, there are other stem cells that we can potentially get safely. Where are they? Well, we know they're in adults. We know they're in umbilical cords. We use them every day in our clinics. And it's very exciting because what's the great thing about umbilical cords? They're available every day. Children are born every day. God willing, that will continue. They're there. And they don't have to be perfectly matched to their donor, to the recipient, rather. You can infuse them without a perfect match because they've not been affected by all the evil humors and exposures of the world like the rest of us adults have been. So that's an exciting area, one in which I'm particularly intrigued by. The other area is fetal tissue. Now, what about fetal tissue? This is a little known fact, but it is supported by all churches, including the Catholic Church, who has really led the charge on this, that in the case of a spontaneous abortion, what we would call a miscarriage, the parents can consent to the use of those stem cells for scientific purposes. Now, of course, in the case of an elective abortion, they would not. But in a spontaneous abortion or miscarriage, yes, that would be perfectly acceptable. So there are a variety of ways to get stem cells. A variety. So are Christians really against stem cell research? If we look at all the different types of stem cells out there, and there's four broad categories which are listed here, we support, as pro-life advocates, 75% of the stem cells that are being studied today. 25% we don't. Those are the embryonic stem cells, because they destroy life. Moreover, we support the 75% of stem cells that are actually helping people in clinics every day around the world. Hundreds of thousands of people have been cured with adult stem cells. So the science is on our side. Laura Dominguez, one of the most wonderful examples we have of somebody treated with adult stem cells, was in a motor vehicle accident and was paralyzed. She went to Portugal under the direction of Dr. Carlos de Lima and had stem cells taken out of her olfactory bulb, which gives you the sense of smell, and her pelvic bone injected into her damaged spinal cord. This young lady walked into Congress with assistance, but walked into Congress after being paralyzed to testify about the utility of adult stem cells and against embryonic stem cells. It was probably on C-SPAN 40 channel rather than where it should have been, highlighted for all the public to see what adult stem cells can do. Unfortunately, it wasn't talked about very much. This young man had a non-healing long bone fracture. And a young person, any athletes in the room, young athletes, I'm sure you're out there. Imagine you're really, really good, and I'm sure you are. Imagine you're really, really good, and you have hope to be to be in the Ohio State game today, and you're gonna win the big game, whatever it is. And all of a sudden you fracture a bone, and all these surgeries failed, and your hope to succeed in sports is gone. Not only that, but even when you want to play recreational tennis or maybe walk with your spouse when you're 50, 60 years of age, you can't do it. Well, this guy went through that. This is the reality he faced. And his physician took his own stem cells out of his pelvis and injected them into his damaged fracture, which allowed his bone to heal. This gentleman here had Parkinson's disease, rather advanced on one side of his body. His physician, pictured with him here, took stem cells out of the healthy side of his brain and put them into the damaged side of his brain, and for 5 years went into remission from severe Parkinson's disease. We never heard about it. These are adult stem cells, not embryonic stem cells. He relapsed, but he had 5 years of remission. Imagine what we can do with 5 years of our lives. This is a personal favorite of mine. And by the way, I went to school in Buffalo. And Buffalo and Cleveland kind of remind me of each other. If nothing else, we have lousy football teams. And hopefully that will change. But Jim Kelly, who was a Buffalo Bill, and I live in Pittsburgh now, so everybody says, well, that's acceptable because he was from Pittsburgh. Jim Kelly's son had Quabe's leukodystrophy, which is a devastating disease that generally results in death about, on average, 3 years of life. Jim Kelly's son, Hunter, lived to about 14 years of age. Dramatic. And Jim Kelly and his Hunter Hope Foundation and other foundations, Kelly for Kids, has raised a lot of money to help fight this disease. Well, this young lady here had the disease. Her name's Gina Ruggeri. She had the disease. She should have died from it. And in fact, she shouldn't be able to see. She shouldn't be able to talk. And she shouldn't be able to walk. But her brother died of the disease a couple years earlier, and her physicians knew to check her very early in development for the enzyme that was lacking. So as soon as she was born, they did an umbilical cord blood stem cell transplant from somebody they didn't even know. And this young lady is cured of an otherwise fatal disease. And we don't hear about it much at all. This young lady had the same procedure as Laura Dominguez. What about cardiac disease? Right now in Pittsburgh and also here in Cleveland, people who have a heart attack and might have the potential to have damage to their heart muscle causing congestive heart failure can get a procedure whereby they collect the stem cells out of the blood and inject them into the damaged vessel. And that's what you're actually seeing here, is billions of stem cells in this little volume here being injected in the cardiac cath lab into the damaged vessel to hope to allow new vessels to grow, to allow the cardiac muscle to be stronger. Very exciting stuff. It actually originated about 15 years ago in Italy, where patients with congestive heart failure, the inability to pump the blood forward, were treated with this procedure and saw dramatic improvements, sometimes temporary, sometimes permanent. But ability to walk, the potential of 5 or 10% improvement in that ejection fraction could mean going from here to the door to walking a full city block. And these things are being done today. In cerebral palsy, in autism, and in a variety of other diseases, clinical studies are underway. And a lot of this is in clinical trials right now, but they're being done, and they're being done with success. Multiple sclerosis, this is in Chicago at Northwestern University. During his master's studies, this young man developed rather severe MS. He's pictured here with his physician who did an autologous stem cell transplant, collected his own stem cells, suppressed his immune system, gave him the stem cells back to regrow and reset his immune system clock backwards. This young man walked across the stage to receive his diploma when he was bound to a wheelchair for most of his studies. This is one of my very favorite stories. Young ladies in the room, perk up right now. If you're not married, listen to this story, because I think it's an important one. I have 4 daughters, by the way, and I tell them this story. And the reason is this. This young lady had scleroderma. Scleroderma turns your skin like porcelain. Father Pavone, pray for me. I'm trying to go as fast as I can. I know Mass is pending. Her skin turns like porcelain. The lungs also turn like porcelain, rendering them unable to breathe. She had been through every treatment known, and her physician told her, "You're going to die within 6 months." She went all over the world to say goodbye to all of her friends. She had a true smile on her face, not the scleroderma smile we sometimes see. She had this smile. And this is where, young ladies, it's important to listen. Her thug of a fiancé left her. Don't marry that guy. Left her. Glad she figured it out. And got rid of him early. Left her, and she got back after all these months of travel, saying goodbye to all of her friends. And her physician said, "There's a new trial we finally got open to do auto transplant, your own stem cells." And amazingly, this young lady's skin started to soften. Her lungs started to heal. She came off oxygen. I just heard this story, it was about 2 years ago now, at the bone marrow transplant conferences that I go to annually. The picture here is on her wedding day to the new man that actually journeyed through this venture with her. And this is what adult stem cells are doing for people, allowing them to not only be alive, but to live and to do great things. And this lady is a perfect example of it every day. In Pittsburgh, we're doing studies, not at my institution, but at another, looking at people with degenerative eye disorders. And what you're seeing here is patient 1, 2, and 3, and you can see the improvement when they wear contact lenses bathed in their own stem cells. The stem cells God gave them that hurt no one. All right, I'm sorry for this picture. I usually give this talk in Pittsburgh. Heinz Ward. In Pittsburgh, people are usually falling asleep at this point. They see Heinz and they all wake up. Heinz Ward, a couple years ago before the Super Bowl, had damaged cartilage in his knee, as you know, and it was a question of whether or not he was going to play. I'm not a huge Steelers fan. I'm in Pittsburgh. I'm a big Polamalu fan. But I'm in Pittsburgh, and here everybody's, was he going to play? Are we going to win? Blah, blah, blah. Well, he had platelet-rich plasma injected into his damaged knee. The story was reported errantly that he had adult stem cells injected into his knee, but it's interesting that platelet-rich plasma have it component and property of adult stem cells. And so Pittsburghers were really happy because, as you know, if you're not a Steelers fan and you see this guy's face on the field, it's kind of annoying enough to drive you crazy, because that smile, even when he's not playing well, drives the opposition crazy. What about dogs? Arthritis. I'm sure there are people in this room with arthritis. In Pittsburgh, just outside of Pittsburgh in the suburbs, they're doing studies now collecting from the fat pad above the neck in dogs stem cells. Our Canadian colleagues found that fat cells probably have more stem cells in other areas of our body if we could just find them. You can picture this. We go into liposuction clinics and we all come out svelte. But nonetheless, and injecting them into the damaged joints. And these dogs are improving. These similar studies are now being done in humans. I just want to mention very quickly a few of my patients. This is a young man who's donating for his brother who had a very devastating disease. And this is how we collect the stem cells. It's a big centrifuge that spins down the blood. We now can get the stem cells out of the bone marrow and even out of other tissues in other studies and centers to collect them on this, what we call an apheresis machine. This is Jill, my very first transplant patient ever. 7 years ago, I saw Jill. I was just out of fellowship. A guy called me, one of the referring docs, and said, Dr. Rossetti, I know you're very busy. Can you please get this young lady into your office? She needs a transplant quickly. And I thought, I'm not busy at all. I just came out of fellowship. I got her in the very next day, and she pulled me aside, and she said, Dr. Rossetti, I need to live. I'm a single mom. I have nobody to raise this child the way I want to raise this child. Jill went through a transplant. I thought, no pressure. Jill and I prayed. We talked a lot. And Jill went on. She walked around with her rosary beads around the floor. She prayed. She was a wonderful witness to everybody. And 7 years later, she remains in remission for a disease that without transplant would have had a 10% chance of being cured. Doing very well. These are a variety of my patients. I like to talk about all these, but in the interest of time, we'll skip some of them. But my point of this slide is this. Not every person, and I'm not violating HIPAA, they all consented. Not every single patient on this slide survived. In general, adult stem cells will cure or significantly benefit 50% of the people who go through the procedures. At least 50% of these individuals. Some don't make it, but some buy time. And I'll give you an example here of this lady, one of my favorite patients ever. She had two dreams. She wanted to live long enough with her horrible leukemia to see her son get married. She achieved it, and to teach again. This is her teaching shortly before her death. She made it back. Her goal was to get back to these kids. If I were a fly on the wall, I just can't imagine how she reached those kids, knowing her time was limited. She had that opportunity thanks to adult stem cells. And so, no, we don't cure everybody. But somewhere between 20 and 90% of people benefit, depending on different variables, and in general, about 50% will. It's important we start educating our insurance companies. This young man had a very aggressive lymphoma that required transplant from his sister, who's pictured here. And he couldn't be transplanted because his insurance company said it was experimental. He died. I'm not God. I don't know what he'd have lived if he had the transplant earlier. He went on to receive a transplant at the NIH funded by you and me and our tax dollars. But I do know this. The less disease you have at the time of transplant, the better off you do. His disease was horribly progressive at the time of transplantation, and he progressed right through it. This young lady had a horrible leukemia. By the way, she had, I think it was about 12 siblings. My wife's one of 14. Each sibling, these big families, if you're out there, each sibling has a 25% chance of being a match to you, to their brother or sister. The more, potentially the better. And we actually found three donors in her family, and we chose the youngest male, which would be the preferred. And she's cured of an otherwise very, very aggressive leukemia, which was devastating for her because she was diagnosed just a couple weeks after the birth of her first daughter. And she's now seeing this child raised and raising her. Does embryonic stem cell research have the greatest promise? That's the other myth. Folks, today this slide is outdated. Adult stem cells have now treated 110 different diseases. Embryonic stem cells have not treated one. Not one. At the end of the cocktail party, when the smoke settles, remind them of that. What are these cells doing besides destroying life? And if you believe we have the economy to worry about, stop wasting billions of dollars on embryonic stem cells. We're wasting our money. I have a colleague on the other side of the country who told me, Rossetti, you're crazy on all this pro-life stuff. But after 10 years of working with embryonic stem cells, I've given up because they're not doing anything and I'm wasting my time and all my grant money. Scientists love grant money, and unfortunately, that's driving a lot of this. She wised up. These are some of the diseases listed here. By the way, there's a brochure on the table for your society here that I wrote. It has some references and resources where you can find these lists of diseases. I love this, the Secretariat for Pro-Life Activities. This guy here with the hard hat, this speaks to Pittsburgh, Buffalo, Cleveland, right? Blue-collar people. They tell me I may hold the cure for Parkinson's. Look to your right or your left. You may hold a cure for somebody, not some pie-in-the-sky researcher who is trying to convince you that embryonic stem cells are the way of the future. Is embryonic stem cell research against the law? Absolutely not. The question President Bush asked was, should we pay for it with our tax dollars? For four decades, billions of dollars have gone into embryonic stem cells from the private sector. And again, not one person has been treated. Many of these companies, by the way, are backing out because of public backlash. Know where your money's going. You can also get the list from some of the resources in my booklet of these different agencies that we think about every day as only doing good who are donating funds to embryonic stem cell research. Know where that money's going. You'll be amazed at what taking those monies away will do to these people. They'll back off very, very quickly. A lot of them are getting out of it, by the way, people I know at administrative levels of these companies who are saying, we're losing money, and we're not getting anywhere, and the public is starting to not use our other medications and the other things we're doing. So they're losing money too on two different principles there. Did President Bush create new restrictions against this issue? Interestingly, no. He loosened restrictions that had existed under President Clinton. And now the floodgates are open. President Bush, by the way, they all basically treated him as if he were a criminal. To say, you've taken away our hope. In August of 2001, when he made his decision, these gentlemen hoisted themselves up, these paralyzed people, to say, President Bush, you've hung us. You've taken away our chance to walk by not funding embryonic stem cells fully. And that's another talk for another day. And this young man here holds up a sign, have a dream, with President Bush behind bars. There's a changing of the guard, as you know. The floodgates are open. Our tax dollars are not protected any longer. We need to change this because we're wasting our money and we're hurting people. I want to very, very quickly go through a couple slides about cloning, and I will do this super fast. Cloning is a part of this issue. At the beginning, we asked the question, where do these embryos come from? One way is through, quote, leftover in vitro fertilized eggs. More on that in just a minute. The other way is through abortion, and the other way is through cloning. The idea that I'm going to clone, say, this young man right here, and that'd be nice, a nice-looking young man, and we'd have two of him, but I'm going to destroy the second clone at its earliest stage of development so that I can collect his stem cells and cure his diabetes. God forbid, I hope you don't have it. But nonetheless, that's the idea. That is therapeutic cloning. What do we hear from our politicians when we bring up cloning? We don't want to reproduce people. We don't want two Jim Rossettis floating around. That'd be terrible. We don't want two of anybody, right? What do they say? We want to clone therapeutically, or what they call somatic nuclear transfer. More on that in just a minute as well. Which of those two things is worse? Both are wrong, of course. We shouldn't play God and create life. That's God's job. We have enough problems. Which of those is worse? Therapeutic cloning. It creates life with the foreknowledge that you're going to destroy it. The politicians' arguments hold no water here on an ethical basis. They talk about not doing reproductive cloning, and they say therapeutic cloning. But again, therapeutic cloning kills. Dolly is the most famous reproductive clone we know. If you read my book, I know this takes some time to go through. Do I have a couple more minutes? Three minutes, okay, sorry. This is how Dolly was cloned. It's in my book. The bottom line is, an egg was donated from one type of sheep, and the nucleus, which holds the DNA, was taken out, and another type of sheep donated a cell by which its DNA was taken out and fused with the empty egg of the other sheep. And then it was implanted, and out came Dolly. It had the DNA of which one? The one that donated the egg or the one that donated the DNA? The one that donated the DNA. What we didn't learn about, though, with Dolly, and this is exactly what's being done to create embryos in animal models right now today. Dolly had all kinds of diseases, cancers, autoimmune diseases. As it turns out, only God knows how to program these cells correctly. We don't know how to do that. And when we try to do it, they turn into other problems. Dolly had tumors. Animal models who get embryonic stem cells get tumors. The company that held the patent for one way of doing this just submitted to the FDA a 20,000-page rebuttal to the FDA saying, no, we don't approve your studies because your animals are getting tumors. And the company still wants to go forward with this in human beings. It's unbelievable. Somatic nuclear transfer, folks, is the same exact thing as therapeutic cloning. Don't be fooled, and that's pictured right here. Can we just simply produce tissue without creating an embryo? There's no way to do that, and that's what's mentioned here in the next few slides. There is excitement over what we call induced pluripotent stem cells, where we take a skin cell and turn it backwards and turn it into an embryonic-like stem cell. But we can't make a human out of it, and we're not creating life out of it. It has the DNA of that person. That's exciting, very exciting. And at our latest research conference, which was held in Hawaii, pray for those people and the people in Japan, please. The researchers said we're closer to using those cells than we are to using embryonic stem cells. Very exciting, and it doesn't destroy life. So where do we get those cells? Maybe from in vitro fertilized eggs, which is right here. I'm going to go skip that one and go to number 10. Number 9 holds no water on multiple levels. But number 10 is important. This is the argument you're going to get at the end of the day. They're going to say, well, now wait a minute. All right, we're not going to clone. Let's do this. Let's just use the, quote, leftover in vitro fertilized eggs from parents who don't want them. Who, quote, don't want them. Well, number one, we know these cells could be adopted. God bless you. We know that there are people out there who may want these cells, these quote, cells, right? There are families out there who might want them. Well, number 10 says because embryos may one day end up being discarded, it makes it allowable and perhaps even a good thing to destroy those embryos to benefit other people. Is that true? The best analogy ethically to this that I can think of is what happened in the Holocaust in Nazi Germany. Every day when I sign up a patient on a clinical trial, the laws that I sign my name to were written to prevent what happened in Nazi Germany. The mentality that these kids are going to be killed, they've been ordered dead by Hitler, let's use them for scientific purposes and gain before they're dead. This is a flawed argument on an ethical level, and it turns out it's a flawed argument on a scientific level as well. One study estimated that at best a couple hundred cell lines might be derived from leftover in vitro fertilized eggs, says Douglas Melton, blah, 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 blah. The very fact that they come from infertile couples may mean that they are not typical and the process of freezing is difficult on these delicate cells. The researchers don't want these. They want the cloned cells. This is also a smokescreen. They do not want these cells, and we know there are people out there who could easily use them. By the way, I think the church, the fathers, knew when talking about the potential dangers of in vitro fertilization. This is some of the stuff that drove those decisions of why that might not be a good idea. What do you want to be when you grow up, says one in vitro fertilized egg to the other? Nothing. I'm going into stem cell research. I died waiting for embryonic stem cell research to find a cure. What about you? This guy says I was the embryo. These are the myths. I hope they tied this issue together. I hope you have an opportunity to pray about them at Mass. And I want to close with two quick quotes. One is here. This slide says, by another scientist, and I like to think of myself as having some scientific background, after all the hundreds of thousands of dollars we both spent for our education, to say we're in this for a reason. This guy says, there are camps for adult and embryonic stem cells, but they only exist in the political arena. There is no disagreement among scientists over the need to aggressively pursue both in order to solve important medical problems. Folks, I want to assure you that there are people out there in the medical community who support you, who believe in what you believe, and don't agree at all with this fallacious statement. That's hubris right there to say that everyone in science agrees with embryonic stem cells. It's simply not true. The first slide I showed was the blastocyst, pictured in the womb where it rightfully belongs. You and I know it doesn't take long to look very much like any one of us in this room. How precious is life? These are my four kids. I have to close with this because they're the greatest blessing in my life. This is us in the Boiling River at Yellowstone National Park. If you've never been to Yellowstone and you know an atheist, take them there and don't say anything. It works. What you're seeing, if you've never been in the Boiling River, is the Gardner River flows down at about 55 degrees and a hot spring comes from, I don't know, 100 yards away at about 120 or 30 degrees and flows into this nice water of compromise. And you can see it even settled down my little 5-year-old redhead, God love her, because she's got the attitude to go with it, the red hair. She's a delight. This is the water of compromise. This is an issue, as Dr. Kenny pointed out as well, that we cannot compromise on. Truth needs no compromise. And I was reading Mere Christianity, one of the best books of all time, and this is what C.S. Lewis has to say when we talk about compromise and when we talk about understanding things as a community and as a society about where we're going. There are two ways in which the human machine goes wrong. One is when individuals drift apart from one another or else collide with one another and do another damage by cheating or bullying. The other is when things go wrong inside the individual. When the different parts of him or her, his desires, faculties, etc., either drift apart or interfere with one another. You can get the idea plain if you think of us as a fleet of ships sailing in formation. The voyage will be a successful one only if in the first place the ships do not collide and get in another's way, and secondly, if each ship is seaworthy and has his engines in good working order. As a matter of fact, you cannot have either of these two things without the other. Folks, we need to internalize this issue and understand it. I hope today made you understand it. I hope the booklets out there help you understand it so we can start to move in unison. Was it Gandhi who said, "I love your Christ, it's your Christians I can't stand"? Somebody said that. And it's true. We need to represent Christ in unison together to overturn issues such as this. One of the earliest texts, "You shall not murder a child, whether it be born or unborn. This is not a new issue, folks. This is a picture called a child's prayer. That's where a child wants to be. That's where each one of us wants to be. We were made to love and to be loved. This exemplifies being loved, protecting the most innocent lives. Join me in that fight. I'm here for you, and I'm glad to answer questions after Mass, before Mass, whatever. God bless you. Thank you.